few years ago, went to go give blood at the blood mobile, right? I'm over here and just, you know, got a little pink bandage around me and all this good stuff. And the woman says, "Is this your left arm?" And I looked at her. I said, "How long you been doing this?" She said, "2 weeks," and I love it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Hayden Outbound Podcast for Southern Storytellers. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Joe.
And I'm Keith.
We're here in Quitman, Mississippi for the second time.
You want to go ahead and tell them what you did?
What? About not turning the camera on?
Yeah.
Take two?
What a great introduction.
A great introduction that will never be replicated.
Sorry, folks, but here we are. Take two.
Well, we're not going to waste a lot of time. I think we're going to have multiple storytellers today, and these are two fine ones. They were with us last time. We invited them back. And Brother Joe has got a story about his son that he's going to lead us off with, and we're jumping at the bit to hear that one.
Yeah. My son was excited when I told him this morning, "Hey, I'm going to tell a story about you." But, you know, I used to preach a lot of revivals, probably 30 meetings a year, done a lot of evangelistic work. And I'll never forget, I was preaching in at Liberty Baptist Church out of New Albany, Mississippi. And I noticed the first couple of nights of revival that my son would get up and out the side door he would go. He'd make, well, the first day I kind of let it go. Well, that's Tuesday night, and he got up right in the middle. I mean, I was hammering down preaching, you know, and he'd go out. He went out the side door, and I thought to myself, if I can make it to the end of the service, I will straighten this out. Well, that night when service was over, I said, "Buddy, I don't know what in the world you're doing." "Well, Daddy, I was thirsty. Daddy, I was this." I said, "Well, I'm telling you what, tomorrow night, if you get up, I'm going to beat you a half inch of your life, son. You cannot interrupt. I mean, it's got to be an emergency." You know, well, now I said, "Look, bottom line is, don't get up. Go to the back, do whatever you got to do, do before service. And then when service starts, you sit down and don't move until the end of service." Well, rocked on. Wednesday night was good. Thursday night, I noticed, man, we had a good meeting and church was over and we was all mingling outside doing our thing. Caleb was still sitting in his seat. And I'm like, "What in the world?" And I went over and I said, "Buddy, what are you doing?" He said, I said, son, what's going on? He said, "Daddy." I said, "Son, just spit it out. What's going on?" He said, "You told me not to get up. And I pooped my pants."
Oh no.
Bless that baby.
I know, right? And so, anyway, he's never let me live that down.
How tall did you feel?
Pretty low.
Man,
pretty low.
Tough.
But anyway,
That's a great illustration of obedience, though.
Well, the good thing, well, that's what I was fixing to say. The good thing is, you know, at least he was willing to be obedient.
Yeah.
You know? But pretty embarrassing moment. And so.
Now, Mr. Keith has some experience in the meal, and there's some pride in the meal.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of prideful events take place. What kind of stories you bring to us?
Well, actually, I kind of made a little change. Instead of going the meal way that I went last time.
He talked a lot about the meal last time.
Yeah, I was going to tell y'all about a cousin of mine, about 10 years older than me. You know, you kind of look up those older cousins and whatnot, and this was quite a character. He had a story where he was over in Butler, Alabama, which is in Choctaw County, mm-hmm. right next door to Clark County. And he had a Chevelle with a 327 in it. And he was feeling a little frisky in the IGA parking lot, got the attention of the local police, if you know what I mean. You know, Butler's finest got behind him. But it didn't take him long to realize that cop car was topping out at about 80 miles an hour. And that Chevelle, even though it wasn't the SS with the 396 in it, that 327 was still eating that cop car's lunch. So anyway, he gets on out there past Lisbon or somewhere or another, you know, and we got to toying with the car. He's going out 10 toward the Mississippi line. And anyway, he would slow down a little bit, give the guy a little hope he might catch him, you know, and he didn't take off. Well, he come into a pretty long stretch, and he seen the blue lights when they come over the hill, and he come off the gas a little bit, and he got to noticing that it was coming a little bit faster than it was before. So it didn't take him long to realize that this ain't the same cop car. So anyway, he gets back in it, and luckily he had did a little hay hauling for a man, and he knew where a farm gate was and a little road approach road up to the gate where Hatefield was. And so he topped the hill, rounded a curve, flipped his lights off, like to miss the driveway, got his lights back on, made the driveway, pulls up in there, and he's sitting there real quiet, like, you know, and that cop just, you know, just blasted by behind him, you know, on the road, headed on toward Mississippi. And he's sitting there listening to everything pop and crack in that car, you know, where he's done heated up pretty good, sitting there trying to get his breath back. And directly he hears a noise. And here comes that town cop by, running about 80 miles an hour back out on the road behind him. And he said he took him a while to quit laughing, but he said he finally gathered his composure. And he backed out of there, went on back toward Butler, and eased on back to the house to keep him, to realize that he was lucky he didn't get caught by the highway patrol. So sometimes toying with the cops may not be the best thing to be doing.
So the town cop was still after
him. He was still in hot pursuit.
But it was just taking him a little longer.
What was that, Buford T. Justice?
He wasn't going to give up, was he?
He wasn't giving up.
He didn't get caught?
No, he didn't get caught. He made it on back to the house, you know.
That might have been some of my buddy's ancestors.
He pulled a fast one over on a state trooper one time.
Yeah. Real similar story.
Question, do you think that state troopers sometimes are just sitting there going, run, run?
Really? Yeah.
I'm kind of bored today.
I need a little action in my life. Why don't you go ahead and I think you can do it. Go ahead and see.
I don't know about a state trooper, but I have had a county sheriff say that he enjoyed our sheriff's deputy. He enjoyed a good chase. You know, give him a chance to just
cat and mouse,
unleash that car and let's see what it'll do.
Well, tell us another one. Take us. You said you had some new direction.
Yeah, well, I'll go back to old Clifford one more time. I don't think I called his name a while ago. He's deceased, but we actually my father and grandfather founded a church, and so I spent most of my young teen years anyway. Every Saturday we were working on that church building doing something. And old Clifford drove up. He wanted to go shoot some dove. And so we told him, you know, all right. So he drives on through the pasture gate and goes on back to the backside of the hayfield down there. And you hear him down there every now and then pop off around. You know, we working. But we decided to break off early, stop early. You know, we just go down and see how Cliff's doing. But we go down there, and he's frustrated. He went to Army Surplus and bought him a bunch of shales cheap. And he was finding out why they were cheap. And Doves wasn't flying much, but he didn't care. It made no difference. A red-winged blackbird, he was shooting whatever flew over, you know.
Starter practice.
And not doing any good. He ain't putting nothing on the ground. So he's pretty frustrated. And anyway, I happened to look up, and you know those black swallowtail butterflies? One of them must have been 25, 30 feet in the air. Why that butterfly was that high up? And I said, hey, Clifford. I said, reckon you can hit that. Old Cliff shouldered that gun and pop. When he did, that butterfly come down like a leaf. He just floating back and forth, coming down. Well, the hay hadn't been cut, and so old hay grass, I don't know if y'all got it in Hayden or not, but old hay get up there, the stick-ups get up there about knee high. So, and that's about where they were at. And that thing's floating down. And we're all just mesmerized watching this butterfly fall, you know. First thing he's made contact with all day. That darn butterfly got down to about the top of those stick-ups, and he started fluttering and flew off.
Off he went. Oh man, didn't even get the butterfly.
Old Clifford threw that gun back then didn't have front back seats, but in the seat of the truck, and said a couple of choice words and said he was going to find somebody to give those shells to. And I think my dad spoke up right quick, told him he didn't think he needed those shells. He could find somebody else to give them to.
My goodness.
That's a bad day. You trying to kill one, you almost got the butterfly, and then he said,
I think he gave those shells to Keith, because there's a man in this church who'll tell you that he did pretty good until he went hunting with Keith, and Keith shot him.
Yeah, I did. I hit him. We were rabbit.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
We were rabbit.
Wait, start from the top of wherever this needs to start.
It wasn't no shells.
I don't know if it was them shells or not.
It wasn't no shells. But I don't know. I really doubt a rabbit run between me and this guy. You know, and so I waited till he got a pretty good angle away from the guy, and I threw up and I popped him. So I'm shooting like, I don't know, it's several degrees. You know, I'm not pointing right at Wiley. And about that time he goes down, I mean, he just falls about the time I shoot. And I look, and he's holding his leg, and I'm like, what? And all the thing I can figure, it must have ricocheted off of something or come out. I don't know how it could even come out of the barrel. But he still got the pellet. He still got the
you
pellet.
You and Dan quailed him.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't let him have guns around here.
My goodness, Mr. Key.
Yeah, he doesn't get to have guns.
I shot that one. I'm just lucky it hit him in the thigh. Of course, it was, a six shot. It wasn't really a
buckshot.
I wouldn't have got hit with a six shot, though, myself, but, you know.
It was just double off buck, wasn't it?
Yeah. You'll see him every now and then. He'll just be rolling
around. He'll be hobbling a little bit, won't he?
So it made it all the way. I guess he was facing away from him, made it all the way from the back to the front.
No, he just went under skin in the front. So that's why I think it must have ricocheted off of something. I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah, when 6 feet away, he usually got the power to go through.
My uncle had a rifle for sale. It was a .22 rifle. This has been years ago, and boy, he didn't want nothing. About $10 is all he wanted for the rifle. It wasn't nothing. And my dad was going to buy it. And anyway, he told my dad's name's Roland. He said, Roland, I can't sell you that gun. He said, I got to tell you the truth about that thing. He said, I was out squirrel hunting with it, and a squirrel running up in an old tall pine down there in the swamp. He said, I knew that squirrel was too far up that tree for that gun to shoot. He said, but I shot it anyway. And he said, I've strained that gun. He said, that gun's strained. And he said, I'd sell it to somebody else, but I just can't sell that gun.
I can't sell you no strained gun.
You're stretched out a little bit.
Stretching.
I think he just wanted to talk about how high up in the tree they shot that squirrel is what he wanted.
He's the same one though that he went to World War II, and when he come back home, he had been hunting in a while, so he got his gun, went off down in the Tom Bigby swamp down there, and he was over in Alabama hunting, and he heard a dangest noise. He said, if I didn't know any better, I think that was one of them airplanes. But we don't got airplanes around here, We seen them during the war, but nobody around here's got an airplane. And he said he looked over his shoulder, and he said it was the dangest mosquito he had ever seen. He said that thing was coming to him. And he said he run and jumped in behind a daggum big, big pine tree, them old virgin pines. This thing was huge. And he said that thing made a beeline for him and stuck its beak right through that pine tree. And he said, thinking quick, he braided off the back side of that, beak. And he said he had him stuck. He said he walked away from him and chuckled. He said, yeah, big boy, I got you. He said, about a half a mile away, he was climbing a little rise, and he said he heard the awful noise behind him. He looked back, and that thing had uprooted that pine. And it was just beating around. It finally got hung up into a oak tree. When he got hung up in that oak tree, he said, well, I got you now. He went on to the house. Well, about 6 months later, about spring of the year, he went off back down there. And he said, that thing had done beat down one of the prettiest new grounds you ever seen, and there's enough bones in that skeleton to build a rail fence all the way around it.
That was a big old mosquito, buddy. That's pretty good.
Buddy of ours, back when we was coon hunting all the time, he called me, and this was late season.
Yeah, late season.
Real late season, He called me and he said, man, deer hunting season's out, and I got this brand new AR-15, and I want to shoot something with it. I'm tired of target shooting. I want to see what this AR-15 will do. I said, well, we're going coon hunting tonight and carry it. We don't typically use a high-powered rifle to, shoot things out of the tree.
Dude, I remember this. I forgot all about it.
So we cut loose on the spot that we knew we'd get them. We knew we'd get one pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Well, my dog got in there, took up the track, hit the tree, and I said, well, buddy, you're going to get to shoot your rifle tonight. He was so excited. And we walked in there, and when we got to the tree, this tree was one of those that held its leaves really long time. It was just you couldn't see.
Beech tree.
We circled and circled and circled and couldn't find the raccoon. And I said, man, it ain't looking good. But there was a cluster of leaves up there so thick that you couldn't see in. I said, hand me your rifle. I said, I'm just going to shoot up in there one time. I raised that gun up and put it right in the center of that cluster of leaves, and I said, boom!
Yeah.
Boom, hit the ground, dead as a wedge, and he looked at me and he said, I done walked with y'all all night, and I wanted to shoot my gun one time, and you take it from me and kill the raccoon, the only thing I have a chance to shoot at. I was in total disbelief. It was a shot in the dark, but it just so happened that coon was in that one spot. Clump of leaves.
You were just
in
trying to make
tree.
It move, is all you were doing.
Yeah, I tried to get him to look if they were up there or whatever so he could see their eyes, but sure enough, he was so disappointed. He said, well, let's just go back home.
Yeah. Well, if I'd have walked that half a night, I'd have probably been a little disappointed too.
He was.
I got one right quick. We owned a little bit of property, nothing major. Run a few cows and whatnot. And my father, he got the big idea of mortgaging the place and buying some equipment. So anyway, things got a little tight around there. You know, he decided we was gonna cut the timber off the place to, you know, pay that mortgage off. And he decided that we were gonna cut it. He wasn't gonna sell it to somebody else to cut. And he went and bought this old put wood truck and another truck with a bolster on it. One of those old logger's dream skidders, you know, where you drag the cable out. Got a big winch on it, built off of probably a 48 school bus frame. Had an old flathead V8 in it. But anyhow, we were out there working on that thing. So one day there, we were loading up the truck with logs. My brother was running the skidder. I was top loading. And one of my friends was down there, and he was tonguing logs on the ground. And, you know, it's kind of hard sometimes to tail heavy in, light in, you know. So he got this one off a little bit. And he's coming up, and I'm standing on, I don't know, daydreaming. I didn't have my brains on what I should have been thinking about. And I looked up, and I realized the butt end of that tree had already swung up on that load. And it dawned on me that when that light end come up, it was going to swing. And I was going to be in the path of the swing. And I'm already at the top of this load. We're pretty high. And behind me was the low side. We were on the hillside. And anyway, I decided I was just going to step off of that load. And I made me about a step and a half thinking I was going to jump off that load. And that's when the log hit me in the hip. And when I hit the ground, I landed right on a stick of putwood right across my back, right where my bottom ribs would have been, but on my back. Man, I come up off that ground because I didn't want nobody to think I was hurt. I made almost a full step. And that's when my face hit the ground because I couldn't walk. I hit back down. Of course, here comes my brother and my buddy around there. They tried to hit me up off the ground. And I'm telling them, hey, boys, tell you what, if y'all give me a minute, I'll get up. But I'm going to have to get up on my own terms. You can't hit me up. But, yeah, so I found out quick that, you know, that logging industry is a good, good way to get hurt.
Sure enough.
That fast.
Yep.
Mushkey said, my small ribs should have been.
Yeah, where they used to be.
Where they used to.
Yeah.
What if you would have stayed up there? What would have happened?
Oh, I don't know. It was probably just showing up. I would have killed me. It may have. Because I'd have been about middle of the road. I'd have caught it in the front, and it would have. There's no telling. At least I was trying to jump off when it did hit me, you know.
You know that one? He knew who that was.
Oh, yeah. Ain't no
doubt.
That's
a Lord going.
Ain't no doubt.
I got, hey, buddy, you need to move. You need to move right now.
That's exactly right.
Because this is fixing to get ugly. And you ain't thought about it.
I got that old putwood truck one day and was headed to town. I think I beat my brother to it. So I was going to have to take a load to town, and somebody else was going to have to stay there and help my dad run the chainsaw. So I was a little quicker, closer one that day, and I beat him to the truck. Well, I got out there, and I run through the gears on the old thing, the old Ford, early 60 model Ford truck with a putwood rack on the back. You know, back then, we'd haul 6-foot links. You know, now it's full of trees they haul around here now. But anyway, we'd stack out. We had a loader, and we'd load until we couldn't put no more on with the loader, and then we'd throw the small sticks up. One of us would get on top, and we'd overload the truck every time we went to town. It wasn't that far to town. And out here where the reservoir ain't, you know, where the water's
where it used to be.
Anyway, there's a pretty little steep curve there off 8, you know, coming out 18 and turning in toward town. It's almost a 90-degree turn right there. And I was letting that truck roll a little faster than what I should have. And then I'm realizing at the last moment, because I'm only about maybe 18, 19, I'm thinking, you know, I probably need to slow this thing down before I get in that curve. Well, I started getting on the brake and letting off, trying to slow it down, you know, and it's still rolling a little bit steep, and I'm in the curve. When I go around that thing, that whole truck just goes leaning to the left. There's an old guy coming out of town with this is actually a VW Bug. It was the original VW Bug. And he's tooling along there. He's just oblivious to the fact that he is just everything but dead. And I'm trying to let that truck kind of ease over a little bit toward that stripe to kind of get some of that pressure off of it. And that thing just kept leaning. I bet those top sticks was above that little car. Anyway, when I got past him, nothing else was coming. So I kind of let it ride on across that yellow line to get over in that oncoming lane till I finally got it under control. So that was another lesson learned. Yeah, you heading out there with that big load like that. You know,
you kept her up.
But it didn't turn over.
You didn't lose any sticks.
No, there again, I think it was divine intervention. Ooh. No, nothing fell off. We had it chained down, bad binder down pretty good, but yeah.
So if the sticks would have went, you were going right.
Oh,
with them.
Right. If they had went, yeah. Well, he would have been. I mean, man, you just imagine those sticks of foot were going through his front glass and that little bug. And he never even had a clue. He never knew.
He'd have never known.
I was looking at him in the face when I come around.
There's a whole movie made out of that.
Yeah.
Final Destination. Do you know that?
Yeah.
That's scary. I didn't like driving next to log trucks ever since I saw that movie.
Ain't no telling what's liable to come off of one of them.
Yeah.
Are you in trouble? Well, we hope you're not. But just in case you are, we know a good lawyer. Whitney Island here in Hayden, Alabama has law services, or maybe if you're not from Hayden, I'm sure she'd be happy to hear from you. So check her out at islandlaw.com. We appreciate Whitney and her sponsoring the show.
Well, I want to introduce and welcome to the Hayden, Alabama podcast, Jason and his brother Robert. These are Mississippi boys right here in Quitman.
They are original Mississippi boys. You can tell by the way they're looking at us. They want to fight already because we're from Alabama, I think.
If you wouldn't have told them we were from Alabama, we could have been fine with that. Well, they've got some stories for us. So y'all take off and tell us a good one.
No, one of the stories about fishing. I caught probably about a 9-pound bass one day. I went running up the house, you know, man, took some pictures of him. Throwed him back in the pond. The camera didn't have any film in it.
Oh, golly.
You know, that sounds like one of them fishermen stories, too. You always ain't got a proof of it.
You really did, though, didn't you? It was 9 pounds if it was an
ounce. Like I was trying to hustle to keep the fish alive. And, I mean, you know what I'm saying, doing everything I could.
Well, kids nowadays don't know what that's like, not having film
not
in
having
the camera.
Right there on your hand, you can just take a picture anytime you want.
It would drive them nuts to not be able to. Oh, let me see.
Let me see
as
it.
As soon as they take those pictures, turn, let me see it.
No.
Well, that should be 2 weeks before you can see the picture. Or whatever you went to Walmart.
If they didn't lose it up there in the store up there at Walmart, where you got a little film roll developed.
Yeah, you might get up there and say it might be down, out of order. It's like, man, I can't even get my film developed.
You remember what innovated for us was 1 hour photo.
Oh, yeah, that was like a big thing.
That was a huge deal.
CBS started that, didn't they?
We can see this in an hour.
That's like I was hauling the other day, and Mama got a watermelon delivered in the mail from Walmart.
Stop. She got a watermelon delivered.
And it was fine, too. I ain't lying, too. But that blew my mind, just seeing a watermelon come in the mail.
Yeah, because that was unheard of back then. We used to have to go wait for the man down the road from come in or for your granddaddy's patch to come in.
Let me tell one fishing story real quick that they reminded me of. And you part of this one.
Awesome.
Shane got permission. Legitimately, that's not his strong suit to get legitimate permission to do anything. But he got permission to go fish at his aunt's pond. He said, come on over there. And it's a little bitty pond. I'm talking about little bitty pond. You can skip rocks all across it. So that's how small it is. And we were out there fishing, and we caught some, you know, 1-pounders, whatever. It was fun. And I tied on a popper. And it was getting right at dark. And I threw that thing across the pond. And as soon as that popper came to the middle, I let it sit for just a second. And I said, boom. Eruption. I'm talking about a huge bass come up, hit that thing. I set the hook and I thought, this thing is huge. I can't believe this bass. So I got it in and actually caught it. It was 6.5 pounds out of that little bitty pond that we were catching just fry out of. And I told Shane, I said, man, we got to get a picture of it. Well, we didn't have cell phones that had pictures and all that. And he said, well, what do you want to do? I said, go get me a bucket. And we'll get some water in the bucket, put the fish in, because we didn't want to kill the bass. Put the fish in the bucket, and he ran to the house, got a bucket. I filled it up. Then we had to put the fish in a bucket, drive back to his house, take pictures of it. We were so excited taking pictures of it. We went to throw it back in the pond, took it and splashed it up, and that thing said, whoop. And right to the top, she was dead as a hammer, buddy.
Put him on in the grease then.
We tried to do the right thing.
He was reviving. If it slow CPR could bring it back.
She didn't live another day.
When you're younger, you just don't understand what you don't know.
I'd love to know. I don't even know where those pictures are now.
You know, I went to Livingston, Alabama over there, and they had a bass tournament. And I won it the spring semester. Caught 11-pound bass.
Whoa.
And I won a $50 gift certificate to a pawn shop and a t-shirt.
On 11-pound bass.
But, dude, I was tickled. My dad's like, I can't believe you're wasting that money on mounting a bass. I was like, you're just saying that because you didn't catch it. But okay. When I put it in the ice chest, it made all the eggs come out. It wouldn't have weighed 7 when I got to the taxidermy. You know what I'm saying? There were like millions of eggs.
Mm-hmm. Y'all go ahead and tell them what that little nippity did to your underarm.
Yeah, and then the next week, went fishing, and I thought I was hung up pretty good with that wood nippity plug, but it wasn't hung up near about as good as I thought it was. It was coming toward my head, and I threw my arm up, snagged me in the armpit. Oh, I told my buddy, I said, man, here, get my knife and cut it out. He said, you got the wrong man for the job right here now. Well, me and the lake manager was good buddies, and I went over there. And when I was getting out of my truck, that back hook grabbed my seatbelt. And it's thump. Man, I sweat drops go just rolling down your back and all that. And he put some gloves on and touched it, and I passed out.
I'm done.
I woke up, and everybody was looking down.
Looking at you.
It's amazing how those little things will make you pass smooth out.
Why does something in your skin like that hurt so bad? I've broken bones that don't hurt as bad as a hook in the skin.
But like I say, when that seatbelt snagged,
you knew you were hooked in.
How'd they get it out? It sounded like they were skinning a catfish in the emergency room. They was cutting my shirt off and just turning it around, got the barb out, and then cut it. Messed up my hooks on the thing.
Them wood nippities, he said.
You ever seen an Alabama rig?
Mm-hmm.
You know, umbrella rig.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I had one that I had hung up in my garage I have a wooden shelf up above the bottom wooden shelf, and it just hung up there on a hook. And I left all 5 of those hooks on there, and they were the big ones because I fished with it in Gunnersville. So they were, I don't know what alt they were, but big for swim baits. And I didn't think anything about that thing hanging there at all. Well, one day I needed something above it. So I was standing there on that wooden bottom shelf, and I was getting whatever that was above it. And I slipped, and here I come back down, and all I could think about with this left arm was getting it back on that bottom shelf to stabilize myself from going all the way down. Well, guess what it found before it made it down to that bottom shelf?
Them good old hooks probably.
It found that Alabama rig, and I want to tell you, it went all the way down to my forearm into the muscle, and it was just lodged right there. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was in a conundrum, as they say.
Using a bind.
I was in a bind, a bad bind. And I was about like you, but I was there with just my girls. So my wife was gone, and I couldn't pass out because I was thinking, they don't know what to do. I come out here, and I'm passed out on the cement floor. So I got one of my daughters to call my neighbor because he was a pretty tough fella. And I said, just tell him to come down here. I'm going to need a little help. He came down there, and I said, hey, what do you think? I think I'm going to run down to the emergency or the urgent care. Let him get out of my arm. He said, no, you don't need, you ain't going to no urgent care. So what are we going to do? He said, you going to get me a pair of pliers.
Go.
I said, this thing's in the muscle. I said, it's in the muscle. This isn't just down in the skin. He said, just get me the pair of pliers. He had a real funny way of talking. Well, I did, because I thought, well, it's going to save me $100 urgency care bill if he can get this thing done. He did. He took that thing. But before he did it, I said, no, you're not doing it. Let me do it. And I grabbed those pliers from him, and I just looked him dead in the eye, and I said, just keep looking at me for just a second. And I took a tight grip, and I just did like that, and whoosh, right out the end he went. And I said, all right, now I'll let you do it. I said, here, I had some wire, those real heavy wire snips or whatever. I said, cut that barb off, and he snipped it off for me. Right back out she went. Guess what I did with that Alabama rig?
Throwed it away.
No, I didn't throw it away, but I took the other 4 hooks off of it, and I put them in the tackle box. Never again. But when you see something like that, it's almost like the Lord's tapping me, like, because I had seen it hanging there before and had not done anything with it.
Just walked by it.
Just walked by it and kept it hanging there, but I took it down after that.
It's like today I taught my uncle not to trust a 12-year-old boy with fresh braid. Taught him that one. Well, you remember the old bridge that was across the road or across the river at Standards Bridge?
Blaylock?
No, Standards Bridge. It washed out. This was an old bridge. It was a wooden bridge, and it washed out in the flood.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just the steel rails that went across the river. And you could walk those steel rails out to the second pier and fish off of it.
By Murray's house?
Yeah.
Okay. By Murray's.
We were fishing there one day, and I used to love to throw a worm. Well, it was a big lizard. you throw across there and pull it back. Well, I threw it across the log, and my uncle's standing next to me, and he's telling me, just pull on it. And I got brand new. This one braid had just come out. Well, I didn't know anything about
that. You can pull the tank up off the bottom.
you can sit down on it. And that's what he kept saying. Just sit down on it. So I sat down on her. And when I really laid back, she coming loose. Mm. And it was like shooting a .22. When that bullet shot, lead come, and it flew at Mach 4 right here in his sternum.
Mm.
Boom. And it it knocked him backwards like he had been shot. I thought he was going to fall off the steel beam. And he went down he goes. And I think,
down
man.
Goes bull.
Down goes bull. And I thought, man, he is not going to appreciate me. But he somehow or another gathered his composure. But, you know, anything in the sternum like that hurts.
He couldn't say nothing to you.
He told me to do it.
He's the one that gave you the plan.
Man, I did. Anytime I went to yanking, he went to getting out the way.
He's looking for cover then. Find I'm somewhere else digging.
Well, tell us another one. We kind of got down our little trail right there, didn't we? Sorry about that.
No, you good. A few years ago, I went to go give blood at the blood mobile, right? I'm over here and just, you know, got a little pink bandage around me and all this good stuff. And the woman says, is this your left arm? And I looked at her. I said, how long you been doing this? She said, 2 weeks, and I love it. And, man, she went to crocheting and ain't hit nothing. And I was like, look here, this ain't hitting. And the other woman just put it right on in there. So they ever ask you, is this your left arm?
Don't
that's
let
a good
stick
sign
you.
Just to get on up.
I have no words.
Dude.
Is this your left arm?
And then she stuck it. Yeah, that makes an L.
She was just trying
no,
to make
no,
it.
No, she did that.
I
she did
that. She was just making you feel a little more comfortable. That's
you're
what she was trying to do.
You're a saint for letting her touch you. She would have even touched
been
me.
Mad about falling out if you ain't figured this out yet. I mean, a couple stories. She done fell out 2 or 3 times.
He ain't afraid to fall out.
But it was working on it because she wouldn't. But I ain't fell out.
Things were closing in with it.
When I had my ACL surgery, they come in to do my IV. And this man walks in, and his glasses are that thick.
Mm.
And they ain't nothing wrong. Don't get me wrong, folks. You wear glasses. They thick glasses. Ain't nothing wrong with it. But you probably don't need to be a phlebotomist if you have glasses that thick. And he stuck that needle in my arm, and he went to – it was like he was wrapping the needle around this vein right here. And I was just old enough to have a little bit of gunction about me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, fella, I don't know if you keep doing that, I'm going to be able to restrain myself. If you wrap that needle around my vein one more time, I'm going to have to punch you in the face.
Mm.
It hurt worse than anything I've ever felt in my life with that needle wrapping around. And I finally said, could you just find somebody else to do it? I didn't pass out, though. I didn't fall out, Mr. Robert.
Yeah, I didn't either.
He didn't ask me. He didn't ask me if it was my left arm, but I could just tell by the he didn't have the visions.
That's like, I mean, ain't no telling how many times we was always big running around the fields catching stuff. Well, out chasing armadillo one night. We was up there running and catching it. Oh, man, I was almost fitting to grab it, and all of a sudden I just heard this commotion behind me. Robert done fell over the turning plow. Whenever he did, he cut the back of his leg, and Mama's the kind of one, she's always going to flip out. I mean, she always kind of expected us to help her boys. We're going to stay hurt in trouble. I went in there, Robert bleeding all over the carport. I said, here, let me go get Mama ready. I walked in the house and said, Mama, just go ahead and calm down. I think it's kind of bad, but I said, he's still walking. Man, Robert, he like split his whole back of his leg over when he fell over that plow. So it was just
kind of ended my toe-touching career.
Oh, man.
You can't stretch near as good as you used to, huh? That one leg draws up on you now.
Increase your 40 time, though, probably.
Tighter hamstrings.
You know, in October of 2010, I had a 25-foot ladder stand on the edge of a cutover. I was going to move it, and it moved a little quicker than it was supposed to. And anyway, I fell everything. And, you know, if you have somebody that fell, you don't ever want to move them or anything. Well, they put me in Daddy's truck, and they drove me out in the emergency room. And then we got the emergency room, and they said, you know, spin around in the seat. Now, everything done went into shock and wasn't nothing move. So I'd done scared to death. You know, thought I'd done paralyzed myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to wear a back brace a little come along in the middle of it there. It was about December. I actually got to kill a deer, though, with a back brace on. My buddy put up a stand. I just bought a brand new Hoyt bow. He said, I know you want to use it. He said, I'm going to tell you you don't need to go hunting, but anyway, I got a stand if you want to. Man, doe come out and just shot. He come load her up and skin her and everything for me. That was good therapy. Always good to have good buddies.
Killed with a back brace on. That's determination.
We towed everything in for him. I was like, about 6 foot is about all you need to climb up this tree.
No, it was a ladder stand.
But I was going to say, it was just one of them things. I was like, man, I said, we already are disobeying doctor's orders 100%. I said, but I know you got to get back out here. But it's just, I don't know, stories you got to have, I guess, to have something to keep you pushing going. Because I said, if you don't ever climb this tree, I said, you'll probably never, never do nothing again with it.
Get so, back on the horse.
About like riding a horse, I guess you're going to say.
Who found you?
They was with me the day.
Oh, when you fell out.
Yeah, see, there was actually two ropes around the top of the seat part, went around the tree. I took one of the ropes off before I put the good rope to lower it. But when I did that motion to throw the old one down, the other one broke. And
there he came, right on top. Everything just falling down on you.
Landed on my feet and rolled over and hit a log. I'd say 25 foot.
Keith earlier, where your ribs were supposed to be.
You know, removing safety straps is just a bad idea usually.
Oh,
it's something we do as guys. I went hunting with a buddy of mine, bow hunting, and I had an API climber, aluminum API. And I got tired of the safety rope getting in between the bottom piece when I was going up. Well, I was so dumb and didn't know anything about hunting to just shorten that. It was just too long in between the two pieces. Well, I wasn't going to do that, so I just took it off completely.
Take it off.
That's a bad feeling when you watch your bottom just like all the way down to the bottom of the tree.
At 30 feet, I had to get really high on this greenfield because it was a naked pine tree right on the edge of the field. When I got to 30 feet, I wanted just that one little.
A little bit more.
That little bit more. And all it had was a metal cable for your feet to go up under. No back strap. I mean, literally, that's the only thing was that little metal cable for your feet. It slid right off the end of my boots.
Mm.
And it said, rec-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick. And it caught. But it was too far. I mean, now I'm literally just doing a tricep extension. A full dip is all I'm doing up in that tree. My feet are, there's nothing. I'm looking at my buddy across the field. He's just, looking at me like that. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, what am I going to do? Like, I can't do this for forever. So I finally got up and got my hip on the side of the thing. And I just sat there for a minute. And I said, the only thing I can do is to go down and hold it like this and try to just hook my foot. Because it was, it was close enough to get my foot if I fully hung. And I took a chance, and I did that, and I got it hooked around my foot, and lo and behold, I got it back up to where I got it, stood on it, and then grabbed the bottom piece.
There ain't a worse feeling than be that high in the air, and it shift. You ever had one shift?
Or something? Oh, yeah.
Right, will you? I ain't moving the rest of the evening.
I ain't moving no more.
Guess what the first thing I did when I climbed down?
Tie that thing back together. Probably threw it away. I thought it away. I left it there.
Never went back up.
I tied that safety rope back on both pieces.
Well, I had a similar deal like that. We was over in front of the house when we was back in high school. Just bought this brand new climber, Well, heck, I let somebody borrow it the weekend before. Well, I always, always take the right side off. I don't know. It's just kind of always take the same side off. Well, I was up there. I was like, couldn't come down at dark. And all of a sudden, my bottom just whoop. It came unpinned. Somebody unpinned the other side. I didn't even check my pin. So I sat up in the tree all day with that. Well, Robert's coming back down through there, and I heard him holler for me. I was like, hey, you got to come over here and help me. So I was just perched up on my top, Well, he took his little hunting shirt off and climbed up there, with it, used it as the top. That was when we was in halfway good shape. We wouldn't make it today. I just had to come on down to the ground. But once we got in there, we was coming down, and he's like, dang, your top wasn't even undone. So I was just sitting up there the whole day with no pin, pin stuck in the side of that tree climber.
Just friction holding it.
And I've been standing up on it all day. I'm talking about looking around, bow hunting out of it. I said, I was just a miracle in itself because it could have been just shoop, straight on down the tree on that one.
So it's bad luck to try to take yourself out, but me with you.
You were trying to take both of us out.
Now I have a problem with it because I'm involved.
Yeah.
I've already fell out once or three, four times. He's got a tight hamstring from turning plow.
Mm. Like I said, we was rough on ourselves, but we had a good time anyway. I mean, it's always always into something.
Yeah, we never wore a. The first time somebody safety asked vest. Me about a safety vest, I was like, "What's a safety vest?"
Or they're not called safety vests; they're harness, safety harness.
Yeah, yeah. You wear a harness. I said, "Man, I got this whole stand around me. What do I need
ain't
gonna ever
fall out no tree. I don't need none of that stuff." And after that, I was like, "I wouldn't bought me one." So I wear it. I wear it from now on. So if I go up a tree, it's gonna be tied off. So
he's a believer.
No, oh, he made a believer out of me, anyways.
Man,
Walt Thomas was a believer. He was a safety man. That's all he studied. If you ain't safe, you out. And I went hunting with him one day, and he had done gotten in his mind that he needed a safety harness. Well, he didn't want to spend money like normal people would buy one that you would legitimately get from Hunter Safety.
Yeah, they manufacture them.
No. He got to digging around in his old, where he was, used to be old, iron worker, them old iron worker belts.
Leather.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
With the big loops in it. Yeah. He done got that and got him a big old rope about that big around. And that's good enough. Well, I didn't know it. So I had gotten out of the stand, was going to pick him up while he was going to come down. And I looked at that and I thought, what is he doing? And it's, I mean, that thing would have held a the USS Francis. You know,
thought Dozer, he could have hung up in that tree.
He'd coming down his rope. He'd be, and I said, Lord, today's done made him a climbing system.
Well, hey, did you leave any bark on the side of that tree, or did you beat it all down with that rope?
That rope, coming down through there. But this sounded like a herd of buffaloes coming out of that tree.
Well, he could drag the deer out with it. Oh, there's multiple uses in
pull
this
your truck out with it if you get you stuck.
Stuck on the way in, yeah. Oh. It just took my climbing harness to pull him out.
It's weight rated, I promise.
Guaranteed. Yeah,
he was saddle hunting before saddle hunting was cool.
Well, tell us another one.
Well, talking about you know, her kids and stuff, I got my little girl. She's autistic, special needs and stuff. My little boy, he's just a wide open little firecracker. 7 years old, ain't big as a minute, but you know, he thinks he'll shoot anything I got. I mean, he's always wanting to shoot something. Well, I was going to get him on some turkeys this year. Man, I had him set up, you know, had his little blind out there. Man, he got there and he ain't a morning person. I woke him up, got him in there. Well, about daylight when everything finna get started, you know, he wanted to go back to sleep. So I done heard 6-7 turkeys gobbling around there. They was cut some trees around it. You know, it was a really, really fine spot just to be in. And all of a sudden, man, I heard, he's like, there's one coming. I was like, all right, we get ready. Just had a little 410, you know, put him a little red dot on there. By that time, they was cutting timber over here beside us. I guess they had everything pushed over. I mean, when they did, there was like 6 turkeys got out there in that field and started fighting in front of him. Now, granted, he's 7 years old, ain't never just getting started, never been in the woods hardly, you know, early in the morning like that. But when that turkey broke the run, I said, shoot one. And whatever he did, he just, you know, he's like, Daddy, I missed. I said, I can't blame you. I probably would have too. That was just way too much going on, you know, for all that. I was like, man, I wish I had my – I was one of the things I wish I had my camera up. But I was trying to get him situated. It was just a show I'll never forget, you know, and just to seeing him get so pumped up over all them turkeys out there in front of him. Yeah, it was just –
it'll be hard to top that.
No, that's what I said. I said, you don't – this don't happen every time. I said, I've never seen nothing like this in my life before. But
if you could send me a text from – kind of about where you was at.
Drop a pin.
Yeah,
well, you know, turkey hunting is about like a duck hole. You don't ever tell you where your duck holes are or nothing like that.
Let them know. If you let them know, they'll be there.
They'll be in your spot next morning waiting on you.
Hey, I was waiting when you get here.
He actually put me on one last year. He's seen it, and there's one of my buddies, I got permission to hunt over there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he said, you need to go over there in the morning. I went. Gobbler was coming right on in there doing good. But he was probably 75 yards out there. Well, all of a sudden, a big old coyote went running toward the gobbler. I said, I want to shoot the coyote and let the turkey go, you know. Well, rode the coyote. Well, I went on out there. I was about 100 yards, let it cool out a little bit. I yelped again. Well, he answered me. I said, oh, yeah, he's still, you know, interested. He coming up there. Anyway, I got the turkey, too. In time, I come out with a turkey, a coyote, and a shotgun out the woods. Like, I need a wheelbarrow. You hear me?
Yeah, you was totally meat, wasn't you?
You, that turkey came back in the same spot after you shot that.
I went, like I said, about 100 yards and just, you know, just let it cool off. About
he was hot.
Morning,
Eddie Salter said when he went, when he ready to take a ride in the pickup truck, he ready to take a ride. Can't do much wrong.
My goodness. You, boy, let's go back for just a second because I'm a turkey, right? I'm sitting here. I'm coming into a hen, you know, you're the hen, and here comes a coyote, and the arch nemesis, here comes a coyote, and all of a sudden, boom, you look back and that coyote's dead. What's that turkey thinking?
Turkey's still afraid of the coyote. He don't want to get nowhere close to it. That's probably what happened.
He probably said, I'm glad it was him, not me.
Glad it was him, not me.
Well, see, when the 12 gauge went off, it was like everything, the birds are still chirping. It's like a thunderclap. It was right at daylight. As soon as he come off the tree, he was headed toward me. You know what I'm saying? And
so it didn't scare him at all.
If I was thinking, this is a good day. Marsh nemesis just rolled up on the ground right there.
But you know how it is. You know, that little girl starts talking.
Come back over and see what she got to say to me.
You know what she said a few minutes ago? Let me go on over there and see what she's got going on now.
She's still interested, too.
And actually, while the gobbler was coming in there, there was two hens behind me. I said, this is great. A gobbler hunting a hen and two hens. Mm-hmm. Well, he gobbled and strutted, and the hen just ran past me. Ran to
him. Oh, this ain't right no good. By you.
But
she did what she was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, so it all worked out good.
It all ended up like it's supposed to.
That's a cool story.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to see if I can tell this one. The day that my son cost me a month's pay with deer hunting, we'd went to Texas, and I'd went out there to take my daddy hunting on a ranch. And my intention was for him to kill a deer. That was the only reason I'd went out there.
Your daddy.
My dad, not my son. And we went that afternoon. My dad went off with a guide, and then we went with a friend of ours who kind of set the thing up. And we got up there in the blind, and it was just one of those evenings where the deer just started coming in. They was coming in left and right, bucks, does. And, man, it was just really fun to see. And so my son's sitting there, and our friend sees a buck come out, and he said, you need to shoot that buck. And I said, no, I'm not here to shoot that deer. Oh, no, you got to shoot that deer. Well, I had told him no 3 or 4 times. Well, he saw that I wasn't going to shoot the deer. So guess who he started in on? My son. Daddy needs to shoot that deer, don't he? Yeah, Daddy needs – yeah, shoot that deer, Daddy. And it was incessant for 30 minutes, and that deer sitting there. And it was a fine deer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at the deer, and I have no desire to kill the deer. I really don't. But my son is just, shoot the deer, Daddy. Shoot. Would you just shoot it? Just shoot it. Well, I'm thinking, okay, my friend here is going to gift this deer to me because he's just dead set on me. Yeah, being nice about it. Dead set on me. And I looked at my son. I said, do you really want me to kill the deer? He said, Daddy, I don't want nothing more than for you to kill the deer. Well, I pulled up and I put it on his shoulder and boom, squeezed the trigger, and he rolled up. Before I killed the deer, though, I had, just in case, started calculating in my mind. And I said, Scoot, how big you think that deer is? He said, oh, probably 140, 150 inch deer. And so I knew what the ranch owner had charge for that deer. And I calculated, and I said, if he does charge me, I'm okay with that. Well, the closer we got to the deer, the bigger the deer got. And Scott kept going, man, that deer's growing. Golly, that deer's getting bigger. We sat down 190 inches later. He missed it by 40 inches. Well, you know, those ranch owners don't.
He didn't miss
it. They don't miss it because they get to measure every one of them afterwards. Cost me a month's pay. I think
that'd be worth it, though. I mean, 190.
I'm talking, it was fun. I would have never done it on my own, but my son convinced me. He's like, do it. Just do it, Daddy. And I did. I pulled a trigger.
He's a good salesman.
No, one morning I got on a turkey, and I was on the edge of Sue and Lovey Creek. Well, he was coming riding in there. I said, when he goes behind that tree, I'm going to raise my gun up. You know, he went behind that tree. A doe started blowing at me behind me. He just kept that tree between me and him, you know, and just went out. Well, the next morning, I said, oh, yeah, he gone. Well, he come on in there. We got behind that tree again. I put my gun up, and he kept that tree between me and him the whole way and just walked out. I could just see the tips of his fan, you know, around that pine tree. But that third morning, I set up on him, and he messed up then. I shot, and he went rolling down the hill, but that steep bluff going to that creek, and he near about fell into the creek. And I had to, you know, run and catch him. Man, I looked back, and my tracks was like 6 foot apart, you know, where you was just short enough straight.
Long step.
And if he'd been like 5 more feet, he'd been in the creek and I'd lost him. But I was trying everything I could get to get
him.
You
got to get down there and get him, buddy.
If you stretch, you'd have been able to get him.
That's right. So you didn't think it, you went and sat in the same spot every hunt?
That's because it's real thick. That was about the only spot you could halfway see. You know what I'm saying? And
he'd come back.
I just wonder if he saw you, if that was kind of his daily routine to. That's just kind of where he was going.
Brought his little landing pad, get up
early, yeah,
get warmed up for the ladies.
On oil, you got an oil rig story?
Oh, I got a bunch. A bunch of safety man. I wasn't the safety man's best friend or favorite. I was always the one. Have you thought about that? I was like, yeah, I thought about all the stuff I could do. That's why I'm not doing it. I was that kind of. I'd get a lot of stuff done, but I was always. Well, I guess not really fighting with him, but just pretty much keeping him on his toes, watching me all the time. But we was down there, you know, I was Derek and I moved up. Well, I done figured out how to slide down the coming down the ladder from the board by like you did. You know, you see all, you still know, hear the old stories you used to do. I done figured it out. Well, that day, it was middle of the night. We was coming out, just came out the hole. I went to go get my pits all lined up and everything ready. Or pretty much it was changing over, coming out the hole, getting ready to displace mud. And, man, I slid down there, and, you know, normally ain't nobody but my driller there and the crew. Man, I slid down there, and there was a company man. There was everybody just standing there looking
staring at
me. I was just like, I'm sorry. I'm going to go down. They was like, hey, you better go on down there right now. But it just, I'd always get
this stuff. Every OSHA rule in the book.
I was playing. I just, when I do it big in front of everybody that don't need to see it. That's usually the way my safety rules break when I break them at. But
how far is that slide?
I think you're a good 90 foot off the floor. So, I mean, it's like, you just
pretty much. I thought he was talking about 10 or 15 foot.
No, you just pretty much kick your feet on the side of the ladder. I mean, you got a weight bucket tied to you, you know, a little bit farther to climbing the sills. But you can get down that ladder in about 2 or 3 seconds. You just keep and just slide down it. But like I say, I did that day. I was just like, I'm sorry.
Sorry about that.
Man.
No,
you move it when you're coming down.
That's a long ways.
Because like I say, you look at 3 joints at 30 foot, so you at least good 90, or probably about 80 foot or so.
It don't matter. Plenty. It's more than 10.
It's plenty. Plenty for me.
Yeah, I was picturing like the firefighters coming down the pole. He's talking about coming just down the high rise.
Yeah, you just on a metal ladder with some rungs on it, you know, going up there to the board up there. But like I said, I was the dummy that loved the oil field. You know, I was the one that always was putting my belt on backwards and swinging around, you know, just all them stories you heard. I was the one that had to try it just to see how I could do it.
Just see if you could do it.
But swinging around on the outside of it?
Mm-hmm. He said,
What is the craziest thing? Because I've never obviously been on an oil rig, but I see them. What's the craziest thing that you saw while you were out there? It could be a nature thing or whatever.
Dang, when I was in West Texas, you seen a lot of stuff. Because the further west you go, I honestly think the people get, you know, further than the southern people we used to, it's just like a totally different group of, you know, I guess atmosphere out there. But it's just like rattlesnakes and stuff out there. When we was in West Texas, because I was on a land rig, so you work all the time, work 12 and off 12. Well, heck, you'd be riding around, you know, rattlesnakes around here, when they coil up and jump, you know, about ever how big they are, that's about as much as they can jump. Them ones over there, I mean, you'll see a 6 foot rattlesnake, and that's like going to jump 8-9 foot across. Like, he'll slide on the ground like 3 or 4 foot whenever he launches at you. It's just, the stuff out there is a lot meaner, I guess. I guess you got to be tougher in the desert.
I'm going to stick away. Noted. Far away.
So, any rattlesnake in Texas, give 9 feet.
Well, give them some cushion room, because like I said, they can sure recover. But
my goodness.
I was a summer hand when I graduated high school. I was on a construction, you know, deal out there. And I remember the first day out there, I went out there and I said, man, what was you in the pen for? I said, I ain't never been in the pen. He said, you ain't got to lie. We all been. And I was like, man, I've been in the cow pen. That's about all, you know, a lot of good fellas, but just wrong place, wrong time. You know what I'm saying?
What was you in the pokey for?
Yeah.
I ain't never been there.
He said, I thought that was a qualification to come to work at in.
I can't believe you got a job. You ain't done time.
Yeah.
Oh, that was one of those answers on the application you marked no, and somehow know that you got the job. You're supposed to mark yes, actually.
I had to hire so many, you know.
Yeah.
That certain number they had to hire.
You know, actually, we had a heifer that was on her first calf, and it was coming out backwards, you know. Well, we pulled the calf out and everything. When I seen it was blinking, you know, when it hit the ground, I said, man, this calf still got a chance. You know, well, I had a halter around the cow, had her tied up. Well, I was playing Dr. Pole, you know, cutting flips with a calf and slamming it down, all that good stuff. Well, it's done and coming to and all, and we're making headway. All of a sudden, my daddy, he just decided to take the halter off the cow. Didn't tell nobody nothing.
No, no.
Well, she thought, you know, he's trying to hurt her baby. Well, she actually hit him. He hit me in the head, and I seen the white light just for the second.
I seen stars, but and, I'm just like, oh, my gosh, I'm dead.
But
don't go to the light.
Yeah, but daddy, he's like, well, I thought y'all through with her. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can let tell somebody help. Something, you know.
Yeah, you could have warned us. This is something we want to know.
But, I mean, it wasn't daylight either. We was doing it in the dark. So, it was just like, I was over here looking at the calf, and they kind of left out the nasty part. I was like, man, I said, see if you can blow down his throat. Whenever I grabbed his nose like that, just oh. I was like, I coughed, and it hit me right there. Oh. I was just 30 minutes later, I could just be like, I can't even think about it. But, like I said, I was over there trying to recover from that, and all of a sudden the cow just hits me in the back, and I headbutt him. It was just, like I said, man, I'm going home, y'all. I
seen the bright flash just for the second night. It was putting a lick on me, son.
Things are going from bad to worse.
You know, one night we was up here at church, and we got here, and a woman said, Robert, there's a cow down there stuck in Mr. Franklin's pond right down the road here. Well, went out there, and the cow having her first calf and all, you know, the calf done dead. We was in the pond. But I could get out to his hips and couldn't go no further, so I called him. He come help me. Man, everything got good. We pulled the cow on up, roped and drug her on up on the bank. She's sitting there about 2 or 3 minutes. All of a sudden, she prolapsed.
Oh.
And I called the people. I was like, look, this cow's going to need some help. You know what I'm saying? He's like, we're on vacation. Just go ahead and, you know, finish her off for us. I said, all right.
Take her out of her misery.
Well, I looked, you know, and I said, you know, there ain't nothing wrong with the stakes on this cow as high as stakes are. So I pulled out my knife, man, and got the back straps out and everything, you know. Everybody's talking about that grass-fed beef, you know. Dude, that's not where it's at. You hear me? You come over there, you didn't see that steak on the grill. You seen it in the crock pot. That joker was so tough.
Granted, you got to say that you put her out of her misery before you.
Yeah, before you was cutting new live steaks, did you?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, I put her out. I put her down.
Put her down and then cut the steaks out.
And the bad part about it, you know, he had his little pistol when he shot her, and she ain't got up in 2 days.
No, but, Jason, this was the same. I don't want you talking about 2 days. It wouldn't be no meat.
No, but it wasn't then, yeah. But you know,
she did 2 days when he cut them steaks up.
Whatever. Well, about whenever he shot her, she just jumped up. I was like, oh, God, shoot her again. You know, but
No. She hadn't stood up in 2 days, and you go to put her down.
I don't know what he's talking about for 2 days. It was that same evening.
Well, she hadn't stood up in a long time.
It's been a while.
You didn't think she was going to make it.
But it was just kind of, I was like, oh, God, she done jumped up on us. But I guess he hit the right something whenever he hit her.
The right word.
Yeah. That'll wake you up.
Ain't no doubt about it.
Find somewhere else to be.
I'd be finding somewhere you shoot at me. I'm going to find somewhere else to be too, you know.
Evacuate.
Well, let's turn to the Word. We're in Matthew 6, verses. A little bit of a lengthy passage here. Hang in there with us. We'll talk about wealth. So wealth is something that the world's real interested in. And for Christians, I think it's a difficulty. I mean, you know, because you got to have money, but there's a difference in having money and having money on the throne. So Matthew 6, verse 19, Jesus speaking, lay not up for yourselves treasure upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break in through or steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thine whole body shall be full of light. But if thine eye be evil, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. Ye cannot serve God and mammon. So that's Jesus teaching in the Sermon on the Mount, and it's a tough lesson because it's just hard. But he's teaching a good lesson here. He starts off with a little motivation, and that's what I like. He kind of gives you some reasoning. He says, you know, everything in this earth, on this earth, is corrupted. It can be corrupted by rust. It can be eaten by moths. And I've had both of those in my life, examples of nice. I've had guns completely rust over. I had a suit one time that was eaten to death with moths. I didn't realize it until I got it out of the closet and went to wear it, and you could see through about as much of the suit as there was there. But on the opposite of having our treasures here on the earth or having treasures in heaven, where moths are not an option, rust is not an option, and thieves cannot break in and steal. And that's because God is the steward of them. God is the protector of all the treasure that we have in heaven. And how do you have treasure in heaven? Is by doing the works for Jesus Christ. I'm not saying being legalist, but just out of a love for Jesus Christ, doing his work, sharing the gospel, discipling other people, being his hands and feet here in the earth. And so all the treasures that we get from that will be stored forever. And you will never have to worry about them being taken away. And what I like here at the very end, no man can serve two masters. And in Jesus' time, the slave trade was alive and well. And a slave, unlike today, where you can have two jobs or you can have a part-time job over here and you can say, well, I work for here 8 to 3 and I go over here work. That wasn't an option in Jesus' day. You were a slave to one person and they owned you and you did whatever they told him to do. So you can't, in that scenario, you can't have two owners being a slave. You're going to work for the one or work for the other, but you can't work for both. And Jesus compares that to, you cannot serve God and mammon. One of those in each of our lives is going to be on the throne of our heart. Wealth in the world or Jesus. And he says, you can't have them both. You got to have one. And when we go back to his original motivation, when Jesus is on the throne of our heart, we'll always have that treasure. But the world, even though it promises and promises and promises to satisfy us and deliver us, will never be able to do that.
When you know you're talking about serving two masters, when you start loving money and stuff like that.
Yes.
Because that's when you start and say, hey, you know, I can put back my church time a little bit, cut my prayer time back a little bit, and start chasing the worldly side of everything. You know, versus keeping your eyes on God, you know, giving him the glory for everything, you start saying, well, if I do this, if I do that, guess what? You're not living by faith and letting, you know, God take over and meet your needs and supply everything you need for you.
Well, be specific. What is the difference? God created work and gave us work to do so that we wouldn't go crazy.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's confused about that.
No.
But what is the difference between working to provide for your family, be a good steward, to your Bible even tells you to save up an inheritance for your children?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those are all things in the Bible. They're biblical principles, but there's a difference, obviously, between that and what Jesus is saying. How do you know when you've crossed
over? When you cross the line? To me, it's when you start compromising. When you start compromising the other biblical teachings that God has taught us to put him first in our life. If we say, well, I'm not, you know what? I ain't going to go to church Sunday because, man, they offering that overtime. So I say I'm going to go because I need to go get that overtime. Or when you compromise and say, I don't want to spend any time with my kids because, you know, they'll kind of take care of themselves. I'm needed over here at work, and so I'm going to take this overtime. I think there's some compromises that come in your mind where you know for a fact that God's having you, pointing you in this direction, but you've turned away and said, no, I'm not going to do that. I would rather go over here and work, or I'd rather go make money as opposed to do these other responsibilities.
There's a balance, right?
There has to be a balance. But there, I guess what I'm really wanting to hone in on, I think the lesson, the takeaway for somebody, they could be wondering, well, am I worshiping? Is mammon on the throne? Is wealth on the throne? And I didn't know it.
Mm.
That's the one I kind of wanted to speak to today, really, is because it is confusing because you have to, it's just like eating and gluttony.
Right.
You've got to eat.
There's a balance.
But then there's a point where of eating that turns into gluttony that turns into sin. And I think that's what, I think this is kind of where we're at in a financial standpoint, is you've got to work to eat, but you can get to a point where you're working so much that you begin to worship it. And what are the symptoms or what are the signs of that? And I think you mentioned some of them. Well, I'm going to work every Sunday because they're giving double overtime on Sunday and I'm going to trade that in. Mm-hmm. Or I can't serve the church in any way because, man, I've always got to be working.
Yeah.
I've always got to work. I ain't got time to serve the church.
Mm-hmm.
Or you've given up your prayer time because you're so tired every day chasing the dollar that you can't even stay awake to pray at night. maybe that's kind of what I'm thinking that might be helpful.
Yeah.
And I think it's in Luke 9, where he's talking about you got to pick up your cross and carry it. You know, you got to make a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. You know, walking with Jesus ain't easy. You got to, just like when he made a sacrifice for us, we got to give up some stuff for him too.
Yeah.
The stuff, we got to give up our selfish needs and wants and desires pretty much to pick up and follow him too.
Yeah.
Folks get, I mean, I was the one that not too long ago, you know, I was kind of the, I'm still loving. I don't want anybody to think I wouldn't love, but you know, I was the younger son, you know, kind of always living in the shadow of the big brother and stuff like that. So when I got in college and got up where I wanted to do what I wanted to do, guess what I want to do? I want to be as much different as I could from my brother. Mm-hmm. Where he's, you know, he stayed on the right track. And guess what I did? I was kind of like the prodigal son. Went running out through there, did what I want to do. I got this. I'm going to live my life like I want to. But when the good Lord gave me my baby, that was a real eye-opener for me.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, I got a better plan for you than what you're trying to live. So, yeah. But it's just how easy it can happen. Because you don't never say, I will not. I quit coming to church. But there was about 6 years I didn't even hardly come to church or nothing. But it's just, you don't start out that way with, when you start walking off, you know, from God, that it's like, hey, look how far I've done went.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's just how quick, how quick the devil can throw the traps and snares up.
Sure.
That gets you bound down where you can't come, or feel like you can't come back. But, you know, Jesus always welcomes you back with open arms.
One of the devil's greatest tactics is he is very patient and he's comfortable with just moving it just a little bit at a time. Where you don't notice it.
Because he's sitting there seeking who he can destroy.
Yeah, he don't have to come in here and flip the table over for you to get you where you want to go.
Just enough to keep you coming his direction.
That's it. And so practical. Let's make this practical. If this speaks to somebody, if somebody's struggling with this right now, one thing I would challenge you to do if you're trying to figure out if the question in your heart right now is Jesus on the throne of your heart or is wealth, mammon on the throne of your heart, I would just maybe ask you some questions. If someone could evaluate your thought life throughout the day and look at the percentage of the time that you were thinking about wealth versus the percentage of the time you were thinking about your relationship with the Lord, the percentage of the time you're thinking about God's word, thinking about what he needs you to do, just evaluate that. What would it look like? Just be honest with yourself. Look at your bank account. Where's your money going? If you have 100% of your money going to worldly things and things for yourself and nothing for the Lord, that may be a problem. It may be indicative. I'm not making any accusations. I don't know who you are, where you are, but I'm just giving you some things to think about. Just look at the decisions you make and the thoughts that you do, and I think they'll help you to figure out who is on the throne of your heart.
Yeah, how does it feel when you release that money in the offering plate?
Your grudge? Yeah. It's so sweaty.
Yeah.
Been holding on to
grip on it.
Yeah.
It's like at church, we have the children's church, and they'll all run down here with they get dollar bills, you know, from all the audits. Every one of them got the biggest smile on their face, you know, and just,
ready to give.
God knows a cheerful giver. That's why we're supposed to give cheerful, you know, like, hey. I seen a sign one time that really stuck out to me. It said, you know, in 10 years, the only person that's going to know you worked overtime is your kids. And that definitely.
That speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully we work through that.
Yeah, I think so.
Y'all feel pretty good about it?
I think so.
Jason said he's good. He's good with it. Well, I'm going to say that we got it good. We had a good show today. Appreciate you guys.
Yeah, man. Thank y'all.
Appreciate Mr. Joe and Mr. Keith earlier coming on, telling us some stories.
Yeah, listen to these two boys. All I can say is Alabama ain't that much different, Mississippi.
It ain't that. We all cut from the same cloth, I think. But we're going to head to Archusa Park. We got a concert and a storytelling tomorrow, but that's going to do it tonight here at the Hayden Alabama Podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Robert.
I'm Jason.
There you go. I love it. We'll see you guys next week.
We didn't coach them. That's
yeah, awesome. No, they did
missed
great.
Out on that opportunity.
Can't make a racehorse out of a plow mule.